The next case is 09950, Mekin Inc. versus University of Akron. Ms. Schimmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. If I may, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
What's your time?
Thank you. The issue in this public contracting case is whether disappointed bidders may seek money damages from the state for alleged public bidding law violations, or whether the only available remedy is injunction. For three reasons, Your Honors, the only available relief here is injunctive relief. First and foremost, this court already resolved this issue in Symantec, where it held that a disappointed bidder is limited to injunctive relief in public contracting cases. Second, and regardless of what this court determines were the pronouncements about injunctive relief in Symantec, the reasoning in that case applies with equal force here and operates to bar all types of money damages, including bid preparation costs. And lastly, there's simply no legal basis for money damages in these kinds of cases. The General Assembly has not seen fit to create a cause of action for money damages in public contract cases, and this court should, we respectfully ask this court to decline MECON's invitation to create one judicially. As to the first point, this court already settled this issue in Symantec, where it held in paragraph 10 that disappointed bidders are limited to injunctive relief. And there are two ways that we know that Symantec's pronouncements about injunctions were binding. And the first has to do with the black letter law of injunctions themselves. And that is that an injunction is an extraordinary remedy, as the court itself noted in paragraph 10. And it's an extraordinary relief that is only available where there's no adequate remedy at law. So it's an either-or proposition. They're mutually exclusive. For the court to have said that an injunction is available is to have said, by definition, that money damages are not. While the syllabus in Symantec references lost profits, that's simply because that was the type of money damages that were at issue in the case. But this brings me to the second point as to how we know that Symantec's pronouncements were binding precedent. If we look at what a holding is versus dicta is, dicta are assertions that the court makes that don't explain why the court's judgment goes in favor of the winner. And in this case, Your Honors, lost profits were denied in Symantec precisely because of what the court said about injunctive relief, that it offers a complete remedy to protect the integrity of the bidding process, the public.
Well, counsel, lost profits would be an extreme remedy. I just joined judgment in that, and looking back at it, wouldn't claim to remember exactly why, but I'm guessing it was because I thought there was language there that was broader than it needed to be, and you now have the exact kind of case where the relief requested really isn't unreasonable. Is it somebody who alleges there was something incorrect in the bid process here, and you're not really claiming there wasn't, says at least give us what it cost us to submit a bid to what we thought was going to be a fair and legal bidding process?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the university absolutely does contest that there was any wrongdoing here. That issue was never reached. This case was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction from the Court of Claims, and no court has ever reached the merits of the case, although the 10th District Court of Appeals touched on the merits when it declined MECON's request for an injunction pending appeal and found that it stood no likelihood of success on the merits. So there's never been any concession, and there is absolutely none by the university. In fact, the basis for their argument, Section Revised Code 9.31.
Well, but to succeed in getting damages for what one invested in preparing bids, you'd have to prevail on that question, would you not?
Absolutely. You couldn't receive, obviously, any kind of relief at
all.
Right.
So, I mean, we're talking about a remedy that's only going to come to bear when one does show, takes that additional step and shows that there was something unlawful about the bidding process.
Correct. But in terms of what the court said in Symantec about lost profits, it applies with equal force to all other court types of money damages. What the court said in that case, it made three core points about lost profits that apply equally here. Well, the first point that it made was about injunctions themselves. And it said that an injunction offers a complete remedy. It's a complete remedy to prevent abuses and to deter bidding law violations. And it's a complete remedy to protect the integrity of the process. And that's correct, that it's the only remedy that's out there that actually...
But it doesn't say one could not choose not to seek an injunction and simply choose to seek recompense for what you spent.
But it's not a matter of choice, Your Honor. It's a matter of the legal remedy that's available. And the remedy that has been said to be available in public bidding cases are injunctions. And because injunctions are mutually exclusive for money damages, it has to be the case that money damages aren't available. And in terms of the other points that the Symantec court made, it said that money damages violate the purpose of the competitive bidding laws, which are to protect.
In Symantec, didn't the trial court award bid?
The trial court had awarded bread preparation.
Then that was not before us.
It wasn't before the court.
So our injunction language in that applies to lost profits. We nowhere in our opinion say, oh, and by the way, the trial court was wrong to award bid costs.
Well, the bid preparation cost issue, you're correct, Your Honor, wasn't precisely before the court because it hadn't been appealed. But the Symantec court's reasoning, the legal reasoning in that case, takes place in paragraphs 9 through 12 of the opinion. And if you look at those...
I believe that I signed on to that opinion to overturn the bid costs that had been awarded because that wasn't before me. Mine only went to lost profits, and so I think you may be over reading, and maybe this is the case to actually look at.
To clarify.
Does Symantec cover lost profits as well, or is it a blanket, you do get nothing?
Well, we think that would be a good approach, and in that case, Your Honor, then certainly the reasoning at Symantec is easily transposable here. I think
you overreach on Symantec to say it doesn't cover lost profits when lost profits were awarded in that case, were not appealed, and were not briefed and addressed by us.
I agree that that bid preparation costs were not before the court. I do think that the mutually exclusive nature of injunctive relief versus money damages means that the ruling as to lost profits, by definition, also would be applicable to money damages. But I certainly agree, Your Honor, the syllabus was about lost profits, and the bid preparation issues were not before the court. But in terms of the reasoning that Symantec used,
following along that line of reasoning, and I'd forgotten that that was a part of that case because I thought we had, in some way, either implicitly or expressly, said that you can recover bid preparation costs. And so maybe it's this case that I'm mixing in my mind. But in this case, we're saying, well, your remedy is injunction, right? In Symantec.
In Symantec, it said.
Yeah, your remedy is injunction, and that would have been on top of the bid preparation costs.
Again, the bid preparation cost specific issue wasn't before the court, and so I don't think we can read the
letter. But in that case, they had already, you can see they had already been awarded that. So we're actually saying you could do both.
I don't think that that's what the court was saying at all, and I don't think there's any basis for doing that, and I can explain, Your Honors. Again, in terms of other things that the Symantec court said is that money damages violate the purposes of the competitive bidding laws because they ultimately punish taxpayers by forcing them to pay.
So you're saying money damages are money damages no matter what the rationale, whether it's compensation for bidding, wasted bidding activity, or lost profits.
Absolutely.
It's still goes to the pocket of the taxpayer, which is the thing that is supposed to be protected by the open bidding process.
Exactly, Your Honors. And this court has also said in multiple contexts that punitive damages aren't allowed against the state, absent an explicit statutory authorization, of which there is none in this context.
Would equate awarding bidding preparation cost as a punitive?
Well, the 10th District in Metcon do. The 10th District in paragraph 24 of its opinion said that money damages are needed as a penalty against the state in order to deter competitive bidding practices. And Metcon repeatedly in its brief is talking about the need for other types of money damages as a quote-unquote meaningful reprisal. That's a penalty, and those are prohibited by Ohio law, absent explicit statutory authority.
In this case, what would the value of injunctive relief be?
The value of injunctive relief, and that question goes to the heart of what I think is a false assumption underlying the 10th District's opinion and MECON's brief, and that is the assumption that an injunctive relief is somehow costless or toothless, whereas money damages pack more of a punch or are a big stick. And that's absolutely wrong, and this case is a good example of that, Your Honor. This case involved the construction of the University of Akron's new football stadium. That project would have had huge costs if there had been delay. The university had secured corporate and community sponsors for the structure, for boxes, for loge seats.
So it's all about timing. Sales. In other words, the disgruntled or the dissatisfied or the non-successful bidder has to jump on an injunctive path immediately, because once they start the construction and once the ball is rolling, as it did here, injunctive relief is meaningless.
Right, Your Honors. An injunction is delay. Delay means time, and time is money. And this case is an excellent example of that. By the time the case was filed and then less than a month later was up in the 10th District Court of Appeals, the case had half of the underground plumbing had been installed, $1 million worth of the plumbing contract had already been completed, $2 million worth of the $3.6 million HVAC contract had already been completed. The whole reason that injunctive relief is and should be the only available remedy in these cases is precisely so that if there are any errors, they can be caught early, so that these costs, such as bid preparation costs, aren't wasted.
And what position does the state take when a contractor who feels the law has not been followed, the competitive bidding law. What position does the state take with respect to bond?
With respect to what, Your Honor?
Bond.
Bond. The state's position of whether a bond has to be filed.
Right.
Right. Bonds have to be filed in those cases.
And like, how much would it be when we're talking about a football stadium?
You know what, Your Honor? I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer.
Potentially
to that
debilitating. Right? It potentially injunctive relief is really not available to some subcontractor here, because the bond would be a showstopper.
I don't think that's correct, Your Honor, and I know that bid protest cases are filed all the time in the courts, and I don't think that the bond issue comes up, and I don't think that that's a prohibition. And to cut to the heart also of the matter is that there's simply no legal basis for awarding any other kinds of money damages in these kinds of cases. There's no statute that authorizes a private right of action for any kind of violation of the bidding statutes. There's no action in tort or due process, because this court has already held that there's no property interest in a contract prior to the contract being awarded. And going directly to MECON's arguments about promissory estoppel, there's no basis for promissory estoppel claims in these cases. First of all, that promissory estoppel was never pled or alleged by MECON in this case. This court has already held the promissory estoppel is not available against the state in the performance of its government functions, such as public contracting. And I think we can safely say even that Cementec has foreclosed promissory estoppel claims, because if we drill down on what promissory estoppel is, the black letter of promissory estoppel, the proper remedy for a promissory estoppel claim is expectancy damages, and the prototype of expectancy damages are lost profits, not reliance damages like bid preparation costs, but expectancy, lost profits.
Counsel, so, for the disappointed bidder, though, the injunctive process, does the injunctive process, is that sufficient for the disappointed bidder? In Cementec, at least the disappointed bidder received the bid preparation costs. And then the question was, can there be over and above into lost profits? And that's where we said the injunctive relief was available. Can't you have both, the bid coverage plus the injunctive relief?
No, Your Honors, again, because injunctive relief is a mutually exclusive remedy. And again, there's no legal basis for awarding money damages in these kinds of cases. Back to the promissory estoppel issue, as I said, Cementec already resolved this issue, lost profits. If you want to see what it looks like for a court to write an opinion that grounds bid preparation costs in a theory of promissory estoppel, page 342 to 343 of the Mechanical Contractors 1 case, the 2001 case from the 10th District Court of Appeals, goes through it, and it walks through what that analysis looks like. And it's on a very shaky foundation. Judge Tyack, in that opinion, was very honest and said, injunctive relief and money damages are mutually exclusive, so that would suggest that there's no legal basis for these damages. He also said, and I recognize that money damages like bid preparation costs don't only punish, serve to punish the taxpayers, and they only serve to reward the bidders, but simply then went on to find it. But there's no legal grounding for that.
Counsel, also, one of the arguments that's made is that injunctive relief really isn't a very complete relief, in the sense that if the trial court initially denies the injunction, it's pretty hard then to go to the Court of Appeals and to get one and to be able to then, you know, prove your case before the matter is contracted and construction starts. So there's a very little short window to do that, and so as a practical matter, a disappointed bidder is probably rarely going to win, even if they have what might be a case.
Well, first, Your Honor, the courts, we believe, are equipped to handle that on an expedited basis, and they do handle that all the time. But your question is ultimately, and I see my time has expired, if I can
finish.
Address your question. Your question is ultimately, can damages serve as a backup once the ship with an injunction on it has sailed? And the answer is no, and particularly not in this case, Your Honors, where the disappointed bidders sat on their rights and waited 2 months until after the bids were open, after the contracts were signed and executed and performance had begun, to ultimately file their suit. So certainly not in a case like this should damages be awarded as some sort of a backup for injunctive relief. But in addition to that, Symantec resolved this issue too. The certified question in Symantec was, quote, does the availability of injunctive relief, if timely filed but denied, preclude the award of lost profits in public contracting and municipal contracts cases? And so the Symantec court was contemplating this very situation where the injunctive ship had sailed and it was no longer, that remedy was no longer available. And what the court said in paragraph 13 of that opinion is that, yes, it's unfortunate if in a situation like that, because of some sort of lower court trial error, the opportunity for an injunction has passed. But the court held that it shouldn't be for the taxpayers to pay for that burden. And I think that also points out the doubly incongruous proposition of awarding damages in those kinds of cases. You're not ultimately awarding it as some sort of a penalty or compensation for what the public owner did, but as some sort of a compensation for what a trial court error was.
You've used your time, Ms. Schimmer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Willeen.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Peter Willeen. At the council table is Andrew Fredlich, who worked on the briefs and has been involved in the case. We represent Mekon, Inc., contractor out of the Akron area that bid on a project and to this day has not had an opportunity to argue the merits of the case. The dangerous rule of law that the University of Akron urges this court to adopt will do nothing but create simply a right without a remedy. There's a common legal maxim that we're all familiar with as lawyers that says, for every wrong, there is a remedy. We don't have a remedy if injunctive relief is the sole and only remedy that a disappointed bidder has to pursue. Limiting a disappointed bidder to injunctive relief is cannot and will not provide the complete and full relief that that is needed when public entities violate the law.
If we were to accept your principle and award bid damages, does only the one who, say you prove your case and you prove that you should have gotten the bid, is that the only person that can get the bid damages, or does anybody who applied and didn't win because the wrong person got it, can they apply for bid damages?
I believe it's the disappointed bidder who brings the case, and typically from a practical standpoint, that disappointed bidder that brings a bid protest case is typically the second lowest bidder. They look at an opportunity, see that there was an issue with the low bidder, and then pursue that their remedies. Seeking the bid preparation costs would be limited to that entity that brought the bid protest and really has the standing to proceed. By limiting it only to injunctive relief, it's fraught with problems because it can't provide adequate protection. And so you have to consider also that with bid preparation costs typically comes, and as in this case, comes a request for declaratory judgment. to have the determination made that the public entity violated the law, so that we will have law that tells public entities when they can do certain things and when they cannot. More importantly, the reason that this does not provide an adequate remedy, injunction only, is if a TRO or the injunctive relief requested is not granted, the law in Ohio now stands for the proposition that once construction commences, injunctive relief is moot. I would refer the court to the TP Mechanical case versus Franklin County Board of County Commissioners. If that's the case, and an injunction is wrongfully denied, then and construction commences, as it did in this case, the case is rendered moot. And consequently, there is no remedy at all. There no longer is an opportunity to even pursue the injunctive relief.
Mr. Willett, you're familiar with our decision in Symantec on this subject, are you not?
Yes, Your Honor.
And in that case, we determined that that injunctive relief was the appropriate remedy, but as you understand, we really only went to lost profits in that case. We didn't say much more, and there were bid costs awarded there. In your view, are the facts of this case covered by Symantec, or are they not covered, or do we need to expand it or change it?
Well, the court was absolutely silent on the issue of bid preparation costs because the limited question.
But we referenced that there were bid costs awarded, I think.
I don't recall right offhand. I do know from reading all the underlying briefs that in fact everyone recognized that the bid preparation costs had been awarded and had not been appealed. To answer your question, the facts are indeed different here. Bid preparation costs were specifically pled. They're specifically being sought. And in conjunction with an injunction that is now rendered moot by the fact that the construction is complete and the football stadium is being used, and also coupled with a declaratory judgment action, to still have a court review what occurred and determine whether or not the university violated the law when it permitted the withdrawal of the bid and then went ahead and awarded another contract to the same bidder.
So you're seeking a direct expansion of Symantec?
I think a clarification
overruling?
Of Symantec, because clearly Symantec did only involve the speculative nature of lost profits, and that's where we get into issues. And I think it needs to be clarified once and for all that bid preparation costs and other forms of money damages may be available to disappointed bidders on a case-by-case basis.
What other than bid costs would you?
Well, in this particular case, we're seeking attorney's fees as well, pursuant to the statutory mandate that allows small corporations to pursue attorney's fees under an equal access to justice type of scenario, where their net worth is less than $5 million and where they can show that the state was not substantially justified in those cases. And in fact, I might add that the state has argued that attorney's fees as damages are actually considered as damages, and that as a result, they argued in the Barr versus Jones case that a case that was originally filed in the Court of Claims should be removed to the court. It was filed in common pleas, should be removed to the Court of Claims because they had alleged attorney's fees as damages.
Mr. Whelan, if we go down that path, doesn't it seem to suggest that bidders have the right to the contracts? And we're talking in this particular case about one subcontractor wishing to have an award, but in these projects, we have multiple bidders, multiple bids that are let on a project. It seems it's somewhat of concern to me when you open the door to money damages on a ground that you were a disappointed bidder. I mean, there's no right to have your award to a contract.
And Your Honor, I'm not necessarily following the question that's there. Are we opening the door
to additional costs to public projects when the idea would be there should be a fund to cover the possibility that we're going to have other bidders that are coming and asking for additional damages because they weren't awarded the contract.
Well, standing is always an important aspect of any bid protest case, and one has to establish standing, typically, before you can even proceed. And the 10th District in the Tiemann and then the mechanical contractors cases, in fact, dealt with the standing issue on more than one occasion. And as a result, we feel that as long as there is standing, then certainly everyone has a right to assume that the state, in this case the university, is going to follow the law. Disappointed bidders, there's typically a limited number of them. There's typically only going to be one disappointed bidder, and that's going to be the second lowest bidder, because the third and the fourth and the fifth realize they won't have a bite at the apple unless everyone else gets knocked out for whatever reason, and they typically don't pursue that. So again, from a practical standpoint, you'll be looking at a simple one disappointed bidder for a particular contract. And the pursuit of money damages in the form of bid preparation costs is, again, de minimis. In this particular instance, this was a $3.6 million contract on a $55 million project. Bid preparation costs, we haven't gotten that far because we never even got out of the first initial conference with the court, but bid preparation costs are less than $10,000.
But wouldn't an additional hurdle, though, you would have to prove that you should have been the bidder. So you can't just sue because you were a disappointed bidder. You would have to establish your entitlement to the bid if the university had followed the proper procedure. So just because you're a disappointed bidder doesn't mean you're going to get recovery under.
Right, you do have to show that you're most likely you were responsive and responsible as well. Not necessarily the lowest in that case, but in terms of the quality standards, there would have to be some indication that you met those qualifications of responsibility or best, as the case may be.
Yeah, but you would still have to prove that they did something improper to award the bid to somebody else. Just
yes.
That you were a good bidder, and in their discretion, they should have picked you over them isn't sufficient burden of proof, is it?
No, it's not. I you do have to show that the state did something improper. That is, you have to go through the entire process before this notion of bid preparation costs are going to be available. If I might also touch on the situation again, why this is an inappropriate remedy that doesn't afford full and adequate relief. Justice Pfeiffer touched on the question of bonding. Typically, in bid protest cases, in my experience over the last 20-some years, every time you seek an injunction, the public entity wants to have a bond in place for the value of the project. In this case, that would have been a $55 million bond in place for the contract. I would argue that that's not appropriate, but that's what you always hear from public entities. As a deterrent, really, for the disappointed bidder. In this case, Metcon couldn't even get a $55 million bond. They had a $3.6 million contract. They're seeking to enjoin that $3.6 million contract, but the other side is arguing that a $55 million bond needs to be in place. Contractors don't have that kind of bonding capacity, especially subcontractors, and as a result, providing an injunction with a condition that you have to then come up with a $55 million bond indeed is again a right without a remedy, because they wouldn't have the capacity to do that and shouldn't, but that's likely the scenario.
Isn't that
they
up
would
to the court, though, to determine the amount of the bond?
It is.
And if your client is there arguing, hey, I'm only responsible for the $3 million bid, a piece of this, and I mean, the court can take that into consideration and order just the bond for the limited amount that affects your client.
I would agree with you, Your Honor, but in practical reality of things, and in my experience, that is not the case. Once you actually
get
beyond
That issue really isn't here, is it?
No, it's not. But it is something to think about in terms of whether this does provide an adequate remedy. And I think that's something that needs to be taken into consideration when this court is issuing a rule of law on this topic.
So, counsel, let me just understand here. You would like to see not that the injunctive relief is discontinued. You would like to have that as one option available, and also the option for
bid preparation.
Yes.
For remedy here.
Yes, Your Honor.
The cost of bid preparation.
And I.
And aren't they, the injunctive relief goes to the propriety of the bid. And if you are successful on the injunctive relief, that stops the project and starts the whole bidding process over again, would it not?
Yes, it does. It would, Your Honor.
Okay, so then not lost profits, but the cost of the bid is off the table. You don't care about that at that point.
At that point, that's correct. And I believe the rule of law that ought to emanate from this decision is one that provides a remedy in the form of bid preparation costs in conjunction with a request for injunctive relief. But on a case-by-case basis, if injunctive relief is in fact granted, then you don't have the right for bid preparation costs because you've obtained a full remedy.
So what would it take then in your scenario if the injunctive relief is denied for you to proceed and prevail on the bid preparation?
It would be the same kind of analysis that you would go through with a permanent injunction, not a TRO or a preliminary injunction, where you'd actually go to the merits of the case and seek a declaratory judgment.
But isn't that one of the
judgment.
Considerations of the first go-around with an injunctive relief is the likelihood of success?
Well, it is, but that's on the preliminary injunction standard. When you get to the permanent injunction standard, you actually go to the merits of the case. We want to get to the merits of the case. And in that instance, if a temporary restraining order has not been issued or a preliminary injunction has not been issued, you still want to be able to get to the merits of the case on a declaratory judgment basis so that you can have a determination as to whether or not the public entity violated the law. And in that instance...
And in your case, if it were bid preparation, the only thing that makes sense is that you also have attorney fees attached to that. Do you want us to rule on that as a...
No, I don't believe so, because I believe, again, we're here before the court on the whether or not there's jurisdiction. And the attorney's fees is simply another element of the damages that were alleged that we feel should grant us jurisdiction in the court of claims. Attorney's fees only arise in this instance if you can show that you're a company of a net worth of right. less than $5 million and then that the state wasn't substantially justified.
Under what scenario would you lose an injunction and yet win bid preparation? That's what I don't understand.
Well, we lose injunctions because courts are loath to step into the shoes of public entities and say, based upon a limited set of facts before me in a preliminary injunction or a TRO standpoint, I'm not going to second guess what the entity did. And they rely on the abuse of discretion standard to really stay away from ever getting to the merits. By allowing a contractor the ability to pursue their bid preparation costs, you ensure that we're going to finally get to the merits. In TROs and preliminary injunction hearings, there's not very many facts developed. They're on a very fast track. There's things left out.
But it's also a timing issue. And if you don't file for an injunction in a timely manner, and they're already down the road, such as this case was, the court's not going to issue an injunction. Then you are in better situation to go to the merits of your bid preparation argument.
Yes, the bid preparation argument along with the declaratory judgment. Yes, Your Honor. I see my
Thank
time
you,
has
Willie.
Expired. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Schimmer, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Three quick points. The first is that what the question this court has to ask itself is whether there's any legal basis for awarding these kinds of money damages. And the answer is that there isn't. This court would have to sink its opinion in some sort of legal seabed, and it doesn't exist. Mr. Whalen's arguments are all fine and well to be made before the General Assembly, and if there is to be a cause of action created here, that is the body that should do it. The second point, going to Justice Stratton's question, is damages here, if they are recognized, would be enormous. Every bidder that submits a bid on a project and that has some basis for claiming wrongdoing would be able to submit a claim and seek costs. So the damages may be de minimis as to MECON itself, but multiply that by, for instance, there were 19 bidders here that submitted combined bids and so forth.
But not if the if the evidence established that B should have gotten the bid instead of A, which forecloses C, D, E, and F.
But that's actually not the way that the public contracting laws work. The standing, any bidder who submits a bid has standing to bring a claim. You don't have to show that you would have been the next lowest bidder. You simply have to show that you were minimally qualified to submit a bid. Because, and again, this goes to the point of why an injunction is the proper remedy here. The point is to vindicate the integrity of the process. And so the law recognizes that any bidder who submits a claim should have a shot at being fairly considered and doesn't have to show that it would have been, say, the runner-up in that
kind
of case.
Thank you, Ms. Schimmer.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.